We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and we're fortunate to have Natan with us tonight, and he has dedicated the class to his Kala Rachel Bat Esther. Hashem should bless them both with happiness and tranquility and nachat, and the Shechina should rest in their home, and we should merit to rejoice together to the point of Yerushalayim's rebuilding together. Every person has different strengths. And in honor of Rachel Bat Esther, I want us to focus on the strengths of Rachel and Esther. Chazal tell us that there are two forces within Judaism. There is the force of Rachel and the force of Leah. Two strengths. Two strengths that appear in each generation, sometimes in different people, sometimes in the same person. Chazal tell us the strength of Leah is the strength of prayer, speaking out. Yehuda comes from Leah. He lets out a roar. Gur Aryeh Yehuda. When the brothers are conversing about what to do with Yosef, Yehuda speaks up. Yehuda sees he doesn't die. Strength of Leah. From Leah, we see David composes all of Tehillim. It's all about talking to Hashem. From Leah, we have the Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel, the strength of standing up to adversity. Leah is the strength of active resistance. Leah is the strength of active religion. Leah is the strength of calling out and yelling. Rachel is a totally different strength. Rachel is the strength of silence. Rachel is the capacity of Binyamin living with his 10 brothers under the same roof. And Binyamin knows for 21 years that they sold Yosef, and for 21 years he's at peace with them. And he doesn't look at them and say, "You murderers, you kidnappers, you stole my brother, you sold him." He names his children 10 names, each one revolving around the trials and tribulations that he envisions Yosef has endured, but he says not a word to his brothers or his father. The capacity to be quiet. The capacity to see, to observe, to know, and be quiet. Rachel and Leah were two sisters, twin sisters, and they had cousins, twin brothers in the land of Israel. They had cousins, Esav and Yaakov, and they were twins, Rachel and Leah, twin sisters. And for years, everyone was saying that Leah, the elder twin, would marry the elder twin in Israel, Esav, and Rachel, the younger twin, would marry the younger twin, Yaakov, in Israel. And in Shemayim, they agreed. In Shemayim, what was written was that Leah was to marry Esav and Rachel was to marry Yaakov. And for 21 years, Leah wept and begged and cried and pleaded. And begged Hashem to marry Yaakov and not to marry Esav. And when the night comes that Leah is switched for Rachel, Leah's prayers have been answered. Ordinarily, a woman does not become pregnant from the first night she's with her husband. Leah does. It's unnatural. It's because God has declared that Leah should have a child with Yaakov. Leah will have half the tribes. When 40 days before Yaakov was created, it was declared in heaven that he would marry Rachel alone, not Leah. In heavens, what was written was that Leah would not be his wife. And Leah not only switched that, but Leah managed to get half the tribes. The strength of prayer. Rachel's strength? When Rachel thinks she has everything to lose. For all Rachel knows, tonight is the wedding, and she's letting her sister go into the wedding. Who promised her Yaakov would marry her? Rachel is silent. And Rachel tells Leah the signs And Yaakov marries Leah. Chazal have on tradition that Rachel hid under the bed and would answer all of Yaakov's questions. So Yaakov wouldn't know it was Leah he was with. The capacity to hold back. The capacity to give at one's own expense. The capacity to be silent. Leah has her strength. But when the time comes for the temple to be destroyed, and the Jewish people have been serving idols and doing everything wrong under the sun, and God says, I've had it, all of Leah's children line up and talk. Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov line up and talk. Leah lines up and talks. Moshe Rabbeinu, descendant of Leah, lines up and talks. The tribes line up and talk. Everyone comes with a different claim. The prophets, the kings, descendants of Leah, all line up and talk. They all use Leah's strength. They plead. And they're unsuccessful. The decree to destroy the Jewish people is hovering. And when they've all said everything they could say, we hear, Kol berama nishma, a voice is heard way up high in heaven. Doesn't say she said anything. What does the prophet in Yirmiyahu say? The prophet in Jeremiah says, Nehi bechi tamurim, embittered weeping. Everyone else spoke. Everyone had what to say. Even the Torah came and spoke. God had an answer. God said, they're not doing what you stood for. Avram had a claim. God said, they've annulled the covenant. Yitzchak had a claim. God said, they've done the reverse of what you did, giving up their lives for the wrong things, giving up their children for paganism. Yaakov had a claim. God had an answer. Moshe had a claim. God had an answer. Everyone had a claim. All of Leah's strength was being put out. She decks the cards on the table, and God says, nope, you don't have the hand I need. And then, another voice is heard. Not talking, but weeping. And that voice can do what all the other speeches couldn't do. Rachel simply sheds her tears. And when God hears her crying, God responds. And God says, stop crying. Rachel, I've seen what you've done. Rachel didn't say a claim. Chazal have on tradition that within her weeping was a claim. She was technically saying, you know, God, I invited another wife into the family. I let her get married before me. If I could handle that, God, you could handle that they took in idols into your temple and all that. If I could handle it, then you could forgive my kids for doing that. But the pasuk doesn't say that Rachel said anything. The pasuk says she was weeping. Within a marriage, us men very often take on the head on. This is what I think. It's not always the most successful way to go about things. Let's take a classical conversation between a husband and a wife. Husband comes home and he says, honey, when can we talk? She says, finish supper, we'll talk. They're sitting through supper and she's getting offended as supper's going on. You're upset at me, aren't you? I didn't say I was upset. I said I want to talk. What are you upset about? You want to talk now? No, we'll talk after supper. Okay. Now he looks at her and says, now you're upset. Why are you upset? I'm not upset. Okay. After supper, he sits down and says, you know, I got the credit card bill today. I thought we agreed we wouldn't charge it over X amount. It's double what we agreed on. She looks at him, says, nothing. She's silent. He turns to her and says, what do you have to say? She's silent. He says, I don't understand. We agreed something. You know, this isn't what we agreed to. How are we going to manage? You know, we have to pay interest on that expense. And then he starts going on. He's going to give a whole long speech, and at the end of the speech she's going to sit there and cry, and he's going to look at her and say, do you expect me to give in because you're crying? And she's going to say, I never asked you to give in. I never asked you for anything. You're right, I'm a terrible person. I never said you're a terrible person. I just said that this isn't what we agreed on. She cries, he gets upset. He gets upset, she gets offended. She gets offended, he says, I'm not about to turn on the defensive just because you're offended. What do you want from me? You're the one that overcharged the credit card. There are different strengths in life. Chazal tell us that when Rivka and Yitzchak were in the house with Esav's wives, so Esav's wives were doing their sorcery and Yitzchak went blind from it. Rivka did not. So one understanding in Chazal is that Rivka was used to it. She grew up with it in her father's house. Her father was also an idol worshiper. The other understanding says, if you take two vessels, if you take a vessel made of bone, and you take a vessel made of earthenware, and you bang them together, the bone vessel will bash the earthenware vessel. Chazal used that as an allegory. Man was created from earth, like earthenware. Woman was created from man's rib, from bone. If you try to face off a man with a woman, she'll bash him, she'll destroy him. So men say, we're the stronger ones. No, we're not the stronger ones. We're not. We have different strengths. And sometimes their strength lies in the strength of Rachel, in the strength of silence. Men will sometimes go out of their minds. Well, what does she want? Maybe you're talking on a different level. You're not meeting. What did she do when he came in? She got offended. Emotion. What's he talking? He's talking logic. They're not talking on the same wavelength. If she senses emotion, it is simply the emotion of anger, disappointment. She's hurt. Whether she was right or wrong is besides the point. If he wanted to be more effective, then he should talk on her wavelength. If he were sad, then she'd say, why are you sad? And then he'd say, I understand there must have been millions of reasons why the card needed to be charged. I just don't know how we're going to manage with this. I understand you completely. I'm saddened. I don't know how we're going to make it work. Notice, is he upset at her or is he sad? Totally different approach. Because if she were the one to be upset over the credit card, if he was the one to charge the credit card, how would she react? If she really wanted to get the point across, he'd walk into the house and find her crying, right? What are you crying about? Classical story. Wife goes to sleep, husband says, don't worry, I'll deal with the kitchen, you go to sleep. Husband goes to sleep. Wife gets up the next morning and she's livid. Husband says, why are you livid? She says, didn't you tell me you're going to take care of the kitchen? I did. Why are there the dishes in the sink? Two dishes. I left a fork and a knife. I don't understand. You told me you're going to deal with the kitchen. I don't understand. Over a fork and a knife, you're getting upset? But I don't understand. Didn't you tell me you're going to do the dishes? Didn't you tell me you're dealing with the kitchen? But I don't understand. Over two dishes, you're upsetting me? We speak on different wavelengths. And very often, what we say logically, they interpret emotionally. There are three points I want us to recognize, and maybe we'll develop them next week. Point number one is what wavelength we're talking on. Is it emotion? Is it logical? They're not contradictory. They could be complementary, but men and women talk on different wavelengths. Point number two, is my point against her, or is my point with the facts? Meaning, wife comes to husband, says, Sunday night I want you to take me to the movies. Husband starts thinking, let's see, she knows I go to the Binyan HaBayit class Sunday night. She knows I really don't want to miss that Sunday night, and she knows I don't want to go to the movies. Now, he could say one of two things. He could say, have you fallen off your rocker? Or he could say, I'd love to. Now, when he says I'd love to, what is he answering her? I want to be with you. I want what you want. Now we could say, look, I feel that our marriage is different when I attend that class, and I'm just wondering how we could make it up. I know I could catch it online, but I just feel like it's going to affect me differently if I'm there or not. So let's take a different example. She says, could we buy that car? I'd like to buy that car. He says, so would I. She says, okay, let's find out. He says, good. They go and they find out. It only exceeds their budget by about 3 times their yearly salary. Notice the difference. If he tell her the obvious, you know, we can't afford it, so then he's already standing opposite her. So point number two is, if the facts are what's going to stand in our way, I don't have to be the one to present that. I could share the emotion. She says, I'd like to. I agree. I would also like to. There's going to be a logical difficulty. Let's find that out together. No, this is very key. It's very key. It's a world of a difference. It's a world of a difference between whether you're the one that represents the logic and you're explaining why it won't work. How often do wives tell their husbands, you know, I think I should go into computers. The husband's going to stand there lecturing for 10 minutes why it's not going to work for her to go into computers. You know, you need to get a degree. You know, it's 4 years of studying. You know, we can't afford it right now. You know, who asked you? Say yes. I would also like, I also think it's a great idea for you to go into computers. Now let's figure out together. Will it work? Won't it work? How will it work? You know, maybe she has something up her sleeve. You don't have to lecture to her here. So that's point number two. He said point number one, recognize the wavelength we're talking about. Point number two, you don't have to be the one representing logic. Think together with her. We all prefer conclusions that we've come to. If your parents walk into the room and said, listen here, I've thought about it, you should be going to Mahon Meir. You're like, huh? No, really. Your mother and I, we thought about it, we're going to get you a ticket, you're going to do really well there, that's exactly up your alley, it's just what you wanted. Chances are you won't want to come to Mahon Meir. No one likes having decisions made for them. Even if it's the logical decision, and even if we were about ready to make it ourselves. But now that someone else has told me, I don't want to do it. So it's always better, when dealing with anyone, and especially our spouses, to think about it together. I don't have to tell her the obvious. I can think it through with her, and either we'll reach the same conclusion, or, and this will happen often, I'll suddenly discover she had a totally different angle. And the third point is to be prepared to understand one another differently. Sometimes we have a conversation, and as is always the case, we tend to understand one another the way we would talk. So if a guy tells his wife, you know, I think it makes sense that we move to the Golan. And she says, oh, that's interesting. And he says, yeah, I thought it through. The rent is much cheaper. I could do my job on the computer over there. And we can invite people. We could do more achnasas orchim. We could influence people. And she's like, interesting. Yeah. I hear. Fine. 2 days later, he walks in and he says, I've already spoken to real estate agents and they're ready to make a down payment and there's a beautiful house and it's exactly what we're looking for. And she's like, what? He says, the house in the Golan, I told you about 2 days ago, we were discussing it. She's like, I never agreed to that. He says, I don't understand what you mean. I explained it all to you. You said you yes. Well, her yes is not the same as our yes. Because just like we said that when she presents us with things, if our logic doesn't agree, we should say, okay, I hear, and then try to think it through with them. Well, all we're saying is really adopting something which they do. When they say yes, it's like, I hear. Their yes isn't always I agree. Very often it's like, it's a nice idea. Could be, okay. Us men, if you made a suggestion, you've thought it through, this is what you think. If I disagree, I'm going to tell you here and now. By women, you make a suggestion, it's interesting. Yes just means it's interesting. You guys with me? No, this is pivotal. There was a couple here that moved apartments. And after they moved, the wife said to her husband, well, you put me in shackles and put me in this house. And he looked at her and said, what do you mean I put you in shackles? He came and said, he said to me, I don't understand what you want from my life. We had a conversation about it. It was a deal that we had to sign on within 24 hours or else someone else would take the deal. I spoke to her. I explained to her what made sense. She agreed with me. She came and saw the house. She agreed. We moved. After we moved, she tells me, you put me in shackles and brought me here. What does she mean by that? Yeah, she said yes. But her yes wasn't a yes. Her yes was, I understand. And he kept saying, why, it must be done, it must be done. She didn't exactly tell him no. She said everything but no. So that needs a longer conversation about understanding one another. But I want us to at least begin understanding. We took on slightly different wavelengths. And we said we'd end each class with a practical thing that we could practice during the week. So I think maybe it's a good idea to try each day to find an instance where you could avoid confrontation and agree and let the things solve themselves. You'll see that you have many opportunities for this with your classmates, with your parents, with your chavrusa. You'll see this comes up in life, and it's a good tool. It's a tactic that women use, but we men should learn to use it as well. Laila tov.